Now, today, if you didn't already know it, is World Sleep Day. And what better reason to remind us of the importance of a good night's sleep? Because apparently 75% of us, up to that number of us, are sleep deprived. And I'm delighted to be joined now by Lucy Wolfe of Cork's Sleep Matters Clinic and the author of The Baby Sleep Solution. Lucy, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
Sleep is a huge issue. We've covered it a number of times on the radio, and I'm always amazed at the reaction we get to it, because it's one of the fundamentals. We hear lots and lots about diet and exercise, but isn't the other big, big thing that we need in life is our sleep?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the third arm of health and well-being. And I'm delighted always that it is in it's on the health agenda. It's in the news. It's making the headlines, because I think it's a case of making sure that sleep is prioritised and there's a huge emphasis put on it, because I think a lot of the time, historically, it's been underrated. And, you know, sleep, you know, has not necessarily taken its rightful place. And now I think that we can become educated and informed. And as a result, we won't have those figures of 75% of people saying they are dissatisfied with their sleeping practices.
And that's a huge number, isn't it?
Huge amount.
It's the majority of us.
Yeah, and they say worldwide, that a third of the population just do not get enough sleep. It's epidemic proportions, really.
And if somebody is sleep deprived, Lucy, what kind of symptoms would they be feeling and experiencing, say, the day after, the night before, sort of?
Well,
stuff.
I suppose when you don't get enough sleep, generally there's a reduced alertness, maybe more a higher tendency for having negative thought processes, inability to maintain your concentration levels, and if you're routinely sleep deprived, that's then your normal setting, so you don't necessarily feel that, oh, I'm not getting enough sleep. Whereas, let's say, if I'm getting enough sleep on a day-by-day basis, then I have one night where I don't get enough sleep, I can recognise those symptoms.
Okay, so for those of us who are chronically sleep-deprived, we've kind of normalised it.
Yeah, and again, we're relying on, high levels of caffeine to keep us going, and you are accepting of those moments where you have huge dips in alertness. Now, that happens anyway, biologically, throughout the course of the day. The whole post-lunchtime slump.
Yeah.
The circadian rhythm is marked through the day, but what we're talking about is higher levels, much more heightened.
I'm glad you mentioned that circadian rhythm and the post lunchtime slump. If we had nature as the dictator of how we slept, would we actually have a little nap in the afternoon? Would that be the normal thing?
Yeah,
for all of us?
I mean, obviously, historically, sleep has taken lots of different formats, and there was a suggestion many, many years ago that we slept in two parts. And again, I'm a fan of the nap even now, because I think it's a good way for people who are not typically getting enough sleep to maybe catch up. But then I would also, in the same breath, say if you take a nap and it interferes with your ability to go to sleep at bedtime, then it's not for you.
Yeah, I love a good nap myself, but yeah, it definitely does make you fall asleep a bit later at night. So, but say somebody who is going around though sleep deprived, are they hungrier? Are they grumpier? Is their judgment bad? Do they make mess of work? Are they dangerous on the road? Are there significant things?
All of the above.
All of the above.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, like, we could keep listing them out, and again, at an increased risk for health issues too. But yeah, the suggestion is that if you're not getting enough sleep, there was a study done that when you were driving, it was the equivalent of being over the limit. And again, we're always talking about, well rested in the workplace, and if your employee turned up over the limit, you'd send them home.
Absolutely.
But there are hundreds of people turning up over the sleep limit, and of course they're making errors in omission, commission, and some of the biggest disasters in terms of shipping disasters, some air flight disasters, have actually been attributed to the people in charge having been sleep deprived. So again, it's our task to keep it up there in the conversation, and that this whole concept of sleep is for the weak, I'll sleep when I'm dead, this kind of scenario that I must go to bed, you're a weaker person than I am because you can't keep going all night.
Margaret Thatcher was on 4 hours a night, kind of macho thing.
Absolutely. And again, she died with dementia, Alzheimer's, and again, there are huge links between people who have not had enough sleep historically and these health issues.
So we need to rest our brains for good brain health going forward into our older age.
Yes, absolutely. So again, if we look at the suggestions for what maybe a person might need, the adult recommendation is somewhere between 7 to 9 hours. And again, we would try to encourage people to aim in between that. So I would even say, even if you try to say, I'll aim for 8 hours, then maybe you will factor 8 hours into your schedule for sleep. Whereas, obviously, it's unhelpful, I always feel, the people like the Donald Trump saying, but he's like a sleep-deprived child. He's irrational, you know, he errors in judgment. So again, the whole, I don't get enough sleep, but I can do fine on it, that's a sliding doors.
So let's accept that 3/4 of us are getting the poor sleep, and we are grumpy, and we're, you know, crap at our jobs, and we're stumbling through our day. What can we do to improve it? Because, you know, I would say someone like me, I'm not a good sleeper, but I've never been a good sleeper. I've been a bad sleeper since childhood.
Sure. So just like lots of people sat on the couch and said, I could never do 5K. Then we can always help improve sleep.
Can we train ourselves?
Absolutely. Because yeah, and I suppose you can condition yourself a better sleep, because it's a biological process. And again, it's gotten lost in interpretation and translation. But again, you can help your body, remind your body to appreciate and improve your sleep.
Okay.
So very often, just small adjustments can make a huge difference. Lifestyle changes can make a huge difference to your sleeping practices. As little as, you know, a regular wake time. And again, I would always be promoting a wake time no later than around 7:30 a.m. Because, you know, often insomniac will say, I lie awake all night, I awake between 1 and 5, and then I turn off my alarm and I sleep until 8 or 9. And you're messing with your circadian rhythm. So again, we're back to that. Circadian rhythm.
And Lucy, you said we shouldn't get up much after 7:30 in the morning, which I certainly would be up by that hour every weekday, but I wouldn't at the weekends. Is that a problem too?
Yeah, it's suggested that, again, if you're struggling with your sleep, that it's good to have the regular wake time 7:07 to re-establish your body clock. And often that is a mistake that we make, that we sleep it off. Now, again, it's for and against. Sleeping it off is good because you're building up, you know, you're repaying your sleep debt. But if that sleep debt repayment then means you can't fall asleep properly on Sunday night, and then you're adding to the debt.
And a huge amount of people would say that the Monday morning tiredness is like nothing else, because they have slept until, I don't know, depending on what their situation is, could be 10, 11, 12.
Absolutely.
On a Sunday.
Yeah.
Can't fall asleep on the Sunday night, get 4 hours sleep going into work on the Monday, and then they're goggly-eyed till Wednesday.
And so the regular wake time is much better implemented for that. So that's Sunday night insomnia. We have even talked about that before. And again, it's about having that regularity to anchor your body clock. And then, of course, exposure to bright light, bright and natural light. Okay. And again, we're spending a lot of time, you know, if you're working, that maybe you're not exposed to natural light, that we're not getting out at lunchtime. And again, those small changes make a difference.
That's really interesting. So are you saying that the fact that someone, like I'm in a room now with no windows at all, as are you, but I'll spend quite a lot of time in a room like this. Are you saying that people who don't get the natural light during the day, that their sleep will be poorer because they haven't been stimulated enough in their waking hours, kind of thing?
Yes, and again, exposure to the bright light regulates your sleeping patterns. And again, we look for, so especially with children, for example, I'm always looking for high-level activity in the morning time and high-level activity, outside activity, in the afternoon. And I look for the same with an adult, so that we are allowing, you're looking for the production of the sleep hormone melatonin. And again, that is stimulated by our exposure to light and dark.
So we need light in the day and dark in the night.
Yes, exactly. And again, this is another factor that's affected our sleep in modern age, that, you know, we are on 24-hour basis. We're hugely exposed to screens, electronic media, and the electric light bulb, you know. So again, there was a time gone by where naturally the day started and it ended, and we relaxed.
With sunlight.
And we closed down as a result of that.
Today is World Sleep Day, and I have Lucy Wolfe of Cork Sleep Matters Clinic in studio with me, taking questions and taking queries around sleep. 75% of us apparently sleep deprived. What is coming between us and our sleep? Lots of different things, and lots of people getting in touch on it too. And Jill, one of our listeners, is on the line now and has a question for you there, Lucy. Jill, tell us about your situation sleep-wise.
Hi, Ciara. Hi,
how
Lucy.
Are you?
I have bruxism, which is teeth grinding. I've always had it, but it just seems to be getting a bit worse as time goes by. I do have a bite guard, which does tend to reduce the discomfort, but it doesn't address the issue, really.
Okay.
So when I sleep in any position other than on my back, I tend to wake with jaw pain and tooth pain. So can you, Lucy, could you suggest anything that I can do to reduce the frequency or severity of it? Because bite guard is not really doing a huge amount, and I have trained myself to sleep on my back, but I could do with a bit more help, really.
I know. And tell me, do you have levels of anxiety in general?
I would tend to carry tension in my jaw, probably.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, like obviously you've got the protection of the bite guard, and you're practicing your positive sleep habits with sleeping on your back. You know, would you be good at your regular bedtime? Are you keeping an eye on your, you know, your sleep hygiene, as we would describe it? So, you know, the natural bedtime for an adult is somewhere between 10 and 11 p.m. And I suppose we'd maybe look at trying to develop some coping mechanisms for any anxiety that you may be experiencing, and to, you know, try to address anything that might be on your mind in advance of sleep, so that, you know, if you're finding that you are having the episodes with more frequency, that it's often what's going on behind the scenes is part of the issue. And, you know, I also think that it's a great idea to have, you know, or to do some gentle stretching exercises to release some tensions in advance of sleep time.
Okay, excellent. I mean, that's
one other thing you might think about doing, Jill, is some dentists treat this with Botox as well. They inject what's called your masseter muscle, which is a muscle in your cheek and kind of in your jaw, and they kind of weaken the muscle a little bit, which you might say that sounds bad, but it's not that big of a deal. And sometimes that can help cut back on the really, you know that thing where you're literally biting down on your own jaw for whatever reason it is.
Yes, that's a great idea, actually. I hadn't considered that. I could get my forehead and my rest of my bits done as well.
Well, I was more thinking of it for the medical reasons. But anyway, whatever floats your boat. Thank you for that, Jill. Another one of our listeners, James, is on the line too. James, what's the situation with you in sleep?
Hi, Ciara. Yeah, I just sent in a text there to your receptor about sleep apnea. Ourselves there were saying to me, the kids have said it once or twice, that if they're passing going to the toilet at night with herself when she's in bed with me, that there might be times where I mightn't sound like I'm breathing at all, and all of a sudden then there's an outburst of exhalation or whatever it is.
Okay.
I'm just wondering, what is the story with that sleep apnea? Is that what that is, or what is the story with it?
Yeah, you haven't been diagnosed formally with sleep apnea, James,
no,
have you?
No, this is only kind of discussions amongst ourselves, but we were wondering what that is. I have done it. I suppose it's
We often rely on our partner to help us if we have some symptoms of sleep apnea. Now, it's obviously an underlying medical issue. We often see symptoms of snoring, pauses in breath in the overnight period. And again, you're maybe more vulnerable because you're male. And again, as the neck thickens, as the years go by, you become more vulnerable. I would be encouraging you to discuss the symptoms with your GP, who would then in turn generally refer you to an ENT. And the next route then is a sleep study to see how many episodes, if at any at all, you are actually having, and as a result that they would design a treatment program for you, which often involves the CPAP.
All right, we've lost James there, but James, hopefully you heard that. Yeah, and absolutely, I think some people do benefit obviously from the oxygen therapy at night, although it's not the most comfortable thing.
No, absolutely not.
Lots of people getting in touch by text as well. Lucy says, someone says, but aren't we doing away with a third of our lives if we take 8 hours out of 24? There's somebody who wants to live life in the fast lane.
Well,
but sleep's really important, though,
isn't it? Absolutely, and again, the suggestion is that, you know, the better you sleep, the more years of life you'll actually have. So there was some study done not a whole long while ago that suggested that if you're getting your optimum levels of sleep, you are saving 10 years of extra life. So again, I would kind of balance that out. But again, it's a bit like everybody knows the advice about health and fitness, but yet not everybody chooses to accept and take it.
Yeah. Barry says, it takes me an hour and a half to get to sleep. What can I do to reduce this? I'm a shift worker. Shift workers have very difficult sleep patterns.
It's so difficult because you're challenging your biological rhythm all of the time. And I guess, you know, taking ages to go to sleep is representative of that. I think that with shift work in general, it's a good idea to try and preserve your sleep. And again, I'd be highly recommending for shift workers, you know, sleeping in two parts to meet your sleep quota. So you do your maybe 5 hours when you finish your shift, and you do 2 hours before the shift to try and help you get enough sleep first of all, and then small things like, depends on what shift you're doing, but if you come off the night shift and you're driving home, I recommend you wear your sunglasses so you're not exposing yourself to that light. It's going to stimulate the waking
part
of your brain.
That's very clever, Lucy. I can see why you're the expert here. Lots of people texting as well about anxiety. 3 or 4 texts just boom 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 in a row about anxiety and sleep.
And you know, the reports would be that, you know, 40% of people have a stress related sleep issue. And again, what we're trying to do there is, instead of saying let's have processes, you know, there are some very successful therapies, obviously CBT is one of them for sleep, but again, I love the idea that maybe we'd get to the root cause of what is causing the anxiety. And rather than always just, you know, papering over it,
don't just treat the sleep, treat the anxiety.
Treat the anxiety, and then again, you know, having really good sleep practices in advance of sleep.
Yeah.
Returning to like what I would say basics. Let's get the phones out of the bedroom. Let's not use the excuse that you need your phone as the alarm clock. Let's buy an alarm clock you can plug into the wall, or just an alarm clock in general. And, you know, again, even if we look at our overuse of electronic media, checking our phone too close to sleep time, try to get rid of the gadgets the hour before bedtime, you know, because it makes a huge difference to the quality of sleep, but so does your diet.
No, and just bear with me, another listener, Noreen, is on the line now too. Noreen, how is your situation with sleep? Are you a poor sleeper?
Yeah, hi, Ciara.
How are you?
Only for the last 10 years. Up until that, I could have slept for Ireland.
And that's only for the last 10 years sounds fairly significant.
Well, I mean, I was 66. I'm 75 now. But 10 years ago, suddenly, almost overnight, I could even pinpoint the month. It was November. And I was down in France and I had a bad night, like you do. And that bad night became bad nights. And I just would sleep for 2 hours, wake up.
Okay.
Then be awake for an hour, go back to sleep, another, and that's more or less the way it happens.
So you're 75 now, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Lucy, 75. As people get older, their sleep does get more tricky, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And again, don't forget, you know, you're on the decline, unfortunately, you know, as such. And again, it's unfortunate that, you know, you survived, let's say, the menopause, where we see a huge amount of sleep disruption.
Yeah, well, that's what I had during the menopause, was an hourly wake up, and then I went back to normal.
Yeah.
Because I had an early menopause in my 40s.
Yes, so. And again, I would think that what we have probably here is, you know, some systematic, you maybe need to discuss it again with your GP, maybe get bloods done. We'd like to see what the iron and mineral levels are
at.
And to, I suppose, look at, you know, one thing that happens is that, you know, there is this school of thought that was very relevant before, that they would say, look, you know, if you don't sleep, get up and go and do something.
Yeah, well, you see, I don't.
Yeah, but actually, I would have suggested that not doing something is better, because otherwise you train the body to wake up and go about and do bits and pieces. The reverse of that is you train the body to lay there awake, you know, and again, that can be also be a problem.
Do you take any exercise at all during the day, Noreen?
Oh yeah, I have a gym twice a week. I play golf.
So you're
I'm fit really, for my age. What? I had a shoulder operation last year, and I mean, I was straight out of it in 6 months, so I'm really fit for my age.
Good stuff. What time do you go to bed at?
I go to bed around 11, half 11.
Okay. And what time do you get up at?
And I get up while I'm awake at 7, say, half six, seven after, you know, the hourly. The
so you're in sleep. Bed for the 8 hours.
Do you get up when you wake up?
I'm definitely in bed for the 8 hours, and I get up when I wake up.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, the suggestion is that the resting body is better than not, you know, going off and doing those bits and pieces. And like, it sounds like you're obviously doing everything you possibly can.
Well, I did, because I have a friend to play golf with. She was a sleep therapist. She's retired now. I had very good advice from her. But all the things that you hear, don't do this, don't do that, and I have none of them, just don't seem to work, you know.
Yeah,
but mainly my age.
Well, that's can be very tough for you. But look, thanks for getting in touch, Noreen.
It was interesting, could I just say that you said about mineral levels and trace elements maybe?
Yeah.
To get that tested?
No, there'd be no harm getting a set of bloods done. No harm at all.
Okay.
All right. Listen, thank you for getting in touch with us.
Thank you.
Lots of people getting in touch on text and by Twitter as well. But Lisa says on text, Lucy, can you give us any tips for getting off sleeping tablets? Because a lot of people who are chronic insomniacs do look for the sleeping tablets.
Yeah.
Sometimes they get them. Hopefully they don't, because they're not great. But then they're stuck on the sleeping tablets. What do you say to
it's
people about trying
cycle.
To get off
Yeah,
them?
It is a vicious cycle. And again, you're probably going to have to, I would suggest to start working on having really good, clean sleep hygiene, first of all, you know. Like sometimes when we're working on sleep, we even go off, we all, you know, caffeinated substances, recommend you just drink water for the month and think, you know, just to really clean your system, have a really clean diet. And first of all, have the good sleep processes in place. And then as it's like a weaning process then, along with the advice of your GP.
It can
be really traumatic on you and your body.
Completely.
It's withdrawal, really.
And they are extraordinarily addictive, so they have withdrawal. Another one of our listeners, Owen, is on the line, and he wants to talk about hypnotism. Owen, what would you like to ask Lucy?
Okay, well, my main problem, I've really had problems sleeping most of my adult life. I'm in my mid-40s now. I've tried most, you know, conventional stuff and again, sleep hygiene and so forth. My big problem is actually getting to sleep, and I'm just wondering, is there any evidence to suggest that hypnosis might help?
Well, I mean, there certainly are some practitioners that specialise in sleep hypnosis. And again, like everything, it's successful for some and not necessarily successful for others. I always feel that if you're already, you know, doing the basic sleep practices, that it is a good idea to explore other therapeutic approaches, because it's worth pushing the door to see if you can help yourself improve your sleep. And again, inability to fall asleep is also classed as insomnia. You know, it's not just when we wake up in the middle of the night that we think is insomnia. It's also the onset of sleep as well.
Yeah, probably couldn't hurt anyway, Owen.
That's great. Thank you very much.
All right. Listen, thank you for that. Lucy, I'm afraid that's all we have time for. I'm very sorry to our texters, because there's about 400 texts there and we're not going to be able to get near them. But we'll just have to have you back, because sleep appears to be something that we're all doing really, really badly. And of course, today is World Sleep Day. So my thanks to Lucy Wolfe of Cork Sleep Matters Clinic. We'll just have to have you back in again.